My name is Greg. I'm one of the pastors here, and really glad that you're here this morning as we continue in a series that we're calling Surprise the World. And I want to start by thinking about the New Testament. There are two testaments, or two sections of the Bible, if you will, an Old Testament and the New Testament. And on the front end of the New Testament are four guys, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and a guy named John, all of them giving eyewitness accounts of what Jesus did, how he lived, what he came to this earth to do. And each one of them had their own angle on it as they were experiencing the very things of Christ to be able to share that with the world. And in the Gospel of Matthew, we see him opening his book with a Christmas story. It's the story of the birth of Christ, and he does it by telling the lineage, or going through the family tree, if you will, of Jesus. In the Gospel of Mark, we don't even see a Christmas story, if you will, because he doesn't talk about the birth of Jesus. He gets toward some of the other stuff that he thought was important for his listeners or his readers to hear about the life of Christ. The Gospel of John, his good news story about Jesus, starts before the world ever was and gives this cosmic story about before the creation of the world, everything that was made through Jesus and the coexistence of the Father and the Son, the Holy Spirit, being a part of all of that is made. Nothing was made that was not made through him. And then the Gospel of Luke. Luke tells the story in the second chapter that we love to hear. It's the story that, it's the Charlie Brown Christmas story. It's the story that when we hear it, because he waxed so eloquent in the telling of the story, it just starts to stir within many of us. It must be Christmas time when we hear these words from Luke. And he said, in those days, Caesar Augustus issued a decree that a census should be taken of the entire Roman world. And everyone went to their own town to register. So Joseph went up from the town of Nazareth in Galilee to Judea, to Bethlehem, the town of David. He went there to register with Mary, who was pledged to be married to him and was expecting a child. While they were there, the time came for the baby to be born, and she gave birth to her firstborn, a son. She wrapped him in cloths and placed him in a manger, because there was no guest room available for them. As the story unfolds, we hear the story be told of these angels that were speaking to shepherds, and shepherds, low class of society at that time, finding their way to the manger scene and worshiping the one that was there, Jesus that was there. As the story unfolds farther down the road, a year or two down the road, we begin to see nobles and kings traveling from all over the world to get at the manger scene, which tells us that at the birth of Jesus, or around this infant Jesus, were people from every walk of life. Those that were prestigious, those that were not. Those that were influential in society, those that were considered lower caste of society. The upper, the lower. All these people gathered around Jesus. And that gives us a snapshot or a sneak peek of the very life of Christ. It was his life that he lived out in a way, this life that we are called to live. He lived it out in such a way that all people, no matter who they were, what their story was, where they came from, where they were going, he welcomed them in proximity with himself. And I want us to hold on to that this morning as we use that for a frame for the entire message this morning. So to back up, our series is called Surprise the World, that we would live in a way that would bring great joy to this world, live a life that would actually be a questionable life, a life that would raise some questions. Why do you do what you do? What's the secret that's inside of you? What's different about you that is compelling, or it's drawn us in like magnetic, that it draws us in and it brings strength and life to those around you? And we want to live those kinds of lives. And last week, we talked about the B, that we would bless others, that we would have three people that we would go out and bless this week. And then I heard the stories this past week from so many of you that were on the receiving end of that, me too, or on the giving end of that, like, man, I did these things, and it really, really ended up blessing me because I was able to do that. And Tuesday morning, I was sitting with one of our church members, listening to them talk about their doing this, blessing three people, and I asked if he would share with you, instead of me sharing it, asked if he would share with you this morning, because it really blessed me as he was sharing with me. And I want to ask you to encourage Chad Ayers as he comes up and shares the story. So Chad, welcome, brother.
Good morning. So I'm in a kind of a season in life where I'm hitting a milestone age in just a couple months. So I'm going through some kind of self-evaluation of who am I, what am I supposed to be doing, what does God have planned for me. And through that, having some good conversation with Pastor Greg, Monday night I was sitting and I'm going through an exercise called the Lead 365. And we're at this place of values, and so presented to me was a sheet of about 150 words to kind of circle what I would call value. So after circling about 30, 40 words, the objective is to get down to just a few words that I truly value, and it was pretty clear to me. I was able to get down to that group pretty quickly. But then reading the next question, it was to take a moment and reflect. Reflect back on the key people that have invested into my life, the key scenarios around those key people and situations that maybe got me to where I am today. So I jumped ahead a little bit and took the time, just felt God pouring into me Monday night. We were sitting there. My wife was on one side of a table. I was on the other. And just felt this opportunity to connect those words, the words that I circled, to the three key people that came to mind. And it was very easy for me to align those words with these three specific people. So I felt an opportunity to bless those that I looked at this list and was able to bless me with, and fired off a text to one of those three, which was my father-in-law, who's not here this morning, but I fired off a text to him, and it started reading with, Dad, I realize you probably won't read this anytime soon because he doesn't pick his phone up very often. And and I don't think he did till Saturday morning. But it was an opportunity for me to tell him what he's done for me. And since I've met that guy, he's poured into me for about 21 years now. I'm in this church today because of him and his family. And I just poured out to him. I don't think it's a conversation I could give to him verbally at that moment, but I was able to draft out a really nice text and let him know what he's done in my life. The other one was my mom, did the same thing. She lives out in Arizona, so I don't see her as often as a son would like to see his mother by any means, but was able to fire her a text off as well and shared with them the exact words that I was able to pull out of this values exercise. And then as I proceeded to share that with my bride, she kind of said to me, you know, what are you doing over there? And I explained it to her and started choking up as I was sharing some of those feelings. And she asked who my third was. And it wasn't my third. It was my number one, but it was definitely her. But an opportunity to pour into those three people that are why I'm standing here today. So it was a great exercise. It was a great way to connect. I didn't even align the whole blessing three until Tuesday morning when we met, that I was able to actually, there was three key people that poured into me and are where I am today, and I was able to bless those three people back by sharing how they blessed me. So.
Awesome. Thanks, Chad. Thank you, brother. Yeah, as Chad and I were talking, I thought, man, I asked all of us to spend last week starting the habit, not just doing it last week, but starting the habit of choosing three people that we will bless every single week, a minimum of three, that we'll write a letter to, or we'll give a gift to, or we'll think enough about that we're going to do some kind of act of kindness toward them. And Chad shows up on Tuesday morning like, man, I got it done Monday night. And like, overachiever, man, way overachiever. And what happens at our church, if you overachieve, we drag you up front. We make you stand in front of the classroom. So thanks for sharing. But I got choked up as I was sitting with him to think about your father-in-law and your mom And then having your wife say, who's your third? And it's you. It's you. That's pretty, pretty cool. So this series that we're in, we're talking about five habits. We just started last week with one habit that we actually think is going to make a difference in the world. It'll make a difference in our lives. It'll make a difference in the world. That we would be people that intentionally bring strength to other people by blessing them. And so the B of an acronym that we're actually using would be that we bless three people every single week. This week we're going to be talking about eating with people. So intentionally eating with three people a week. And it is an acronym, as I said, that we bless three people every week, that we eat with three people every week. And we'll speak more about that this morning. And the rest of the acronym is, it's called BELLS. We're going to be working off this, that we bless, we eat, we learn, we listen, and we send. And the rest of that stuff we'll talk about later. But today, I want to think about eating together. And I want to start by us thinking about horror movies, all right? So if you can just jump with me on that. So horror movies or horror sort of stuff that got pumped out on the radio that points to the greatest fears. Psychologists say that the horror genre of every single era points to the greatest fear that is in the society. So if you go back like to the 1950s, it was aliens. And then you jump to the 1960s. We were engrossed in war, and we thought about war. The 1970s and the 1980s, it was all about serial killers, although some of us thought it was actually big hair. We thought that was the biggest, scariest thing back there. But the 1990s, it was all natural disaster stuff. And then we find in the year 2000, what? What is horror movies? What's out there now in the year 2000s? Any guesses? Walking Dead, does that help anybody? Zombies, right. It's zombies. Zombies. Like, what? Okay, I get the 1950s, because the 1950s, we were talking about aliens being the greatest fear that was in the culture at that time, because it makes sense. There was a high-altitude balloon. The Air Force was trying out that crash-landed in New Mexico, Roswell, New Mexico. And there was this news that spread across the nation that began to grip people with fear that we're being invaded by aliens. And I believe the people in the UP have not let go of that yet. We have to help them out, right? So the 1960s, it's war. Of course. Vietnam was dominating our culture, dominating the news. It was all over in terms of our culture. Yes, it gripped us. 1970s, 80s, we've got Charles Manson, Ted Bundy, makes sense. We're thinking about serial killers. You go to the 1990s and we've got Mount St. Helens and we have El Nino and we go, boom, natural disasters start to grip us. And then the 2000s, zombies, like really? Really? Why zombies? And I think it makes some sense, and here's why. Our deepest fear in this day and age is this, that we're just walking around as groups of people bumping into each other. We're in the same hallways. We're going down the same roads. We're sitting in the same areas with each other. We can gather in the same house watching the same TV, and we're not connected at all to each other. Just sitting there with each other, no connection at all, wondering the question, do you see me? You see me? Like I'm here. Surrounded by people, but feel so all alone. Just zombies going through life alongside of each other, but not really with each other. Some of us, we've watched those video clips, and some of them are really funny, of people that are so engrossed to their phone that they end up in terrible places, like walking, looking at their phone, and all of a sudden, boom, they smack into a glass wall and bounce off it. And it's kind of humorous. Or we watch somebody, at least to me it's humorous, sorry, but you're watching somebody that's looking at their phone and they go walking straight into a fountain that we would toss pennies into, and boom, suddenly they're swimming. Jeremy showed me one this past week of a bear, a black bear, a big one, that was walking down the streets, sidewalk, of some city. It's like, man, what happened to Sherwood Forest? I got to find my way back, right? It's walking down the sidewalk, trying to find its way back to the woods, and the guy's looking at his phone, unaware he's got a black bear a few feet away from him, and suddenly when he recognizes it, it's pretty funny. This guy turns inside out, trying to get away from this thing. Yeah. Who would do that, right? They have sidewalks now in China where they put a pedestrian path in the middle of the pedestrian path that is a texting path. Sounds crazy. Really? For those of you that are so locked to your phone, you can't pay attention to anything else. There's a path for you to stay on. Just pay attention to the little lines and you won't get in trouble or you won't have to pay attention to anybody around you. Who would do that? Who needs that? And I would just like to say, maybe I don't need that, but I'm going to tell you, I'm guilty of some of this stuff that I'm talking about. Guilty. Just this past week, I hopped out of my truck over on the other side of our building to walk into the staff offices on that side. And as I jumped out, I looked at my phone. I had a bunch of text messages, and I started firing out texts. And I walked, and I kept walking, and I kept walking, and I realized I had passed two exits. I missed two exits before I realized, oh, there's another door. I guess I'll go in over here into the building. Walked a quarter way around the building before I even recognized. And I have no idea. I really don't. I have no idea. I looked back for a second and didn't see anybody, but I had no idea if I passed anybody. So if I passed you, and you're like, he is so rude. I am so sorry. I was a zombie, right? Just walking through, mindless, locked into something else, but not connected to the people around me at all. Anybody else been there before? Sitting in your house. People all around you, sitting at a table, sitting in a restaurant. I've seen it. People sitting at the same table, they're not even with each other. They're somewhere else, connected somewhere else. Our greatest fear, zombies. I think there's something there. And I want to get at it this way this morning. I want to ask the question and then chase after the way of Jesus and wonder if there's something in the way of Jesus that might find its way into us that could actually be an answer for so many people in this world that are longing for real connection, including me and including you. There was a pastor and an author. His name's Tim Chester. He raised this question right here. He asked, how would you complete the following question? The Son of Man came. Play with me on this one. Anybody able to complete that? There are three answers. I got two of the three. I asked my son. He got one of the three. The Son of Man came. Can anybody finish that? All right. To seek and save the lost. There's one. Anybody have another one? He did come to die. That's not the connection in the scripture, but it's close. The Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many, to die. So that's two of the three. So the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. The Son of Man came to seek and save the lost. And the third one, the Son of Man came eating and drinking. I didn't get that one, like eating and drinking. I got the first two. I've got it. That the Son of Man came. It's his mission. It's his heart. It's what he came to the world for. He came not to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many, for all of us. The Son of Man came seeking and saving that which was lost, us. That's his mission. And then we have this thing that says the Son of Man came eating and drinking. Eating and drinking. In fact, he ate and drank so often that many saw him as a glutton. They saw him as a drunkard. They even said it in the Gospel of Luke chapter 7. And they said that here is a glutton and a drunkard, a friend of tax collectors and sinners. Now we know that's true, that he was a friend of tax collectors and sinners, but we also know he wasn't a drunkard and he wasn't a glutton. But we know this, if there's only three times in all of the Bible that these words, the Son of Man came, that are together and they're connected to his mission, to seek and save that which is lost. It's connected to his mission, not to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. And then these words that he came eating and drinking, we should pay attention to not just two of those, but all three of those. And his mission being the first two, his method being the third. His method's the third. Jesus' mission, seek and save. Jesus' mission, give his life and to come to serve. His method, I'm going to do that by getting with people, in proximity with people. I'm going to let them see me and I'm going to truly see them. I'm going to be with them. This is my method. His mission is people. His method is eating with people and drinking with people. Think about Luke 2. Remember, I asked us to think about that frame of the story of the birth of Christ and who gathered around with Jesus. When he's just an infant, we've got lowly shepherds, the bottom rung of society. We've got these high nobles. We have all sorts of people with all sorts of stories, past and future stories that are gathered around Jesus. And Jesus's life, his mission was given to all people. His method, too, finds its way among all people. We can see it where he gets with this guy named Zacchaeus. Zacchaeus is a cheat in their society. He is a disrespected man in the society. He is a hated man among the society. So much so that when Jesus is walking down the road, there's crowds of people that are gathered and they push this man to the back of the crowd. Get back. And he has to climb up a tree to even get a glimpse at Jesus. And Jesus is walking down the road. His mission, all people. His desire, serve all people. His life, I'll give it to all people. And there's a person. Hey, Zacchaeus, how about you and I hang out today? I need to come to your house today. My house? Yeah. Let's sit together. Let's eat together. Let's spend time together. Let's connect with one another. Shock to all the people around, including Zacchaeus. And what results in that is this incredible conversation that leads Zacchaeus to a place where he looks at his life and says, I don't want to live this way anymore. What I've been doing is not bringing life to me or those around me. It's choking out the life for me. And I want to turn and live a different sort of life. And his life completely changes. Jesus' mission got fulfilled through that method right there of connecting with this guy. We see Jesus in the Gospel of Luke being invited into another meal, all kinds of meals. This one is by Simon, a Pharisee, a guy of high respect in the culture, a guy of high standing and influence in the culture, says, I'm having a prestigious party of the who's who. Jesus, would you like to come and be a part of our party? And the rabbi, Jesus, shows up to the party. And he reclines at the table and he eats with them, all people gathered around with Jesus, and Jesus with all people willing to accept, be with anybody who would accept and be with him. And there he was with them when a woman of ill repute, doesn't belong in the circle according to everybody but Jesus, comes walking into the house, walks into the meal, walks into this place, and is disrespected by everybody but Jesus. And he takes time with her. And there she blesses him and he blesses her. We see a story of Jesus feeding 5,000 people, breaking bread and taking fish, multiplying this food so that people can connect with one another and look at one another, spend time being with one another and partaking together, not just of food, but of life with one another. He celebrated in that. And then again in the Gospel of Matthew and the Gospel of Mark, they tell the story of the feeding of 4,000 where it happens again and Jesus multiplies the food that people can connect with and eat with. Clearly, the Son of Man, his mission is to seek and save the lost. His mission is to serve and to give his life away to others, but his method is, I'm about eating and drinking. Something happens around a meal. Something happens when we get together that is powerful. Mary, Martha, a couple friends of his. He goes over to their house. What are they doing? They're preparing a meal that Jesus can sit down and eat with. And we find one of them making their way to Jesus. The other one continues to work to prep the meal. And Jesus then invites the other in, saying, you know, the meal is something, and it's a beautiful thing that happens around a table, but this is what I'm really all about. Come and sit. The other has chosen the better to sit and spend time with me. This is his method to connect. We see Jesus, his first miracle, his mom, Mary, says to him, they've run out of wine. Jesus turns water into wine. Where? At a wedding feast. At a feast where they're celebrating and they're with one another. So much so did Jesus eat with his disciples and with his friends and with the higher ranks of society and the lower ranks of society. So much did he eat and drink and spend time connecting with others. It's his method. So much time did he do that, that at one point he was asked, so, like, Jesus, you're a rabbi. Do you not teach your students, your disciples, to fast like the other rabbis do? And his response was, it wasn't one to say that fasting isn't valuable, but his response was, no, I have not taught that. Because when the bridegroom is here, we eat, we feast, we drink with one another. Jesus being the bridegroom and the church being his bride, Jesus took a cup of water from a woman that offered it to him, thank you, and began to converse with her, somebody that, oh, this story is so loaded, we could have a sermon of sermons on this story, but a Samaritan woman who, just for this morning, she was from the other sides of the tracks. You didn't talk to a woman in public. You didn't do that. You didn't sit down, surely, and have a cup of water with her and talk about life. But Jesus connected and saw her and spoke into her and listened to her and said, I see you. I see you. And I care about you. You matter to me. It's a beautiful, beautiful moment. One more story. Jesus was on a walk, but before that walk, he left the throne room of heaven itself, came into this world because he had a mission to seek and save the lost. He had a mission. The Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. And he had a method. He's going to do that by eating and drinking, connecting and being with us, to move in with us, and not to just bump shoulders with us, but to connect heart to heart with us. And Jesus was walking with a few guys, but prior to that, he walked for 33 years doing this work. He found himself standing before a crowd of people. On one side, there's this man named Barabbas. On the other side, there's Jesus. In the middle is this man named Pilate, who's asking the question of the crowd, I'm prepared to let one of these go that have been arrested. I'm prepared to let one of them go. Surely he's thinking, man, Jesus is going to be let go. The crowd's going to want Jesus because he hasn't done anything wrong. He's done everything right around here. This Barabbas, man, he's an insurrectionist. This guy carries a knife under his cloak. He's willing to stick Roman soldiers because he's so frustrated with Rome being in power. And there's a crowd of people that have the same feeling as Barabbas. We're sick of Rome being in power. And so Pilate asks, who should I let go? And the response is, give us a boy. Give us our boy, man. Give us Barabbas back. He's one of us. What do we do with Jesus? Crucify him. Crucify him. And so they do. They hoist him up on a cross. Crucified, the one who said, I came to seek and save the lost. He came to give up his life. This is my mission. Fulfilling the mission, I'm giving my life now as a ransom for many. And they laid him into a tomb and they sealed it, thinking, done. Done. It's over. We've got this guy dead and gone. 3 days later, he rises from the dead because death could not hold him down. And he came out of the tomb, and we find him walking down a road, not long after this, 7 miles from Jerusalem toward Emmaus. two of the disciples are there with him and they don't recognize him. You're like, what? How can't they recognize him? I really don't know. I don't know the answer to why they are not recognizing him, other than what the Bible actually tells us is that they were kept from recognizing him at that moment. Something or God himself is holding that back for this moment. But they know something's different about this, because we're not just walking and bumping shoulders here. We're not just tooling down the road, not paying attention to each other. Our hearts are burning inside of us as we speak to him. Something amazing is happening inside of us. And when they get toward Emmaus, Jesus just keeps right on rocking. These guys are back here and he just keeps right on going. They're like, wait. We're going to start a fire and we're going to sit around table together. We're going to break some bread and drink together. Will you sit and eat and drank with us? And Jesus is like, yeah, that's what I do. That's my methods. You want me to sit and connect with you? That's who I am. Yes. And he sits down and they begin to eat together. And the story ends with this word right here. It says, when he was at the table with them, he took, this is Jesus, bread and gave thanks, broke it, and began to give it to them. Then their eyes were opened and they recognized him. At that moment, sitting there around the table, they're like, oh, now I see you. Now I see you. And Jesus and I see you. We are connecting with one another, something around the table. Maybe that's one of the things we just love about Christmas, isn't it? That we get around table with one another. What would it look like for this to be such a habit that which is best about Christmas becomes 365 days a year for us, that we break the motion that we're going through. We break stride. We don't get on life the way that some people in China might get on a path, a pedestrian path. We don't not pay attention, but we intentionally say, let's sit with one another so that I can see you and you can see me. Let's connect heart to heart. One of my favorite movies, don't judge me on this, please, but one of my favorite movies is Peter Pan. I love it. And I love the rendition called Hook, where Robin Williams plays Peter Pan, and he comes back to this land from Neverland, and he grows old so that when he finally finds his way back to Neverland, he's an old man. And they're looking at him. He can't fly anymore. He does not crow anymore. And they are doubting that this is really even Peter Pan in the first place. He doubts it himself. And one little boy at one part in the movie comes forward and grabs his face and pushes back the wrinkles and looks into his eyes and says, oh, now I see you. Now I see you, Peter. Well, at that moment, Peter Pan still does not believe he's Peter Pan. He still can't see it. For those of us that have seen the movie, what happens? They get around the table together. There's all this food together. And they start to have a food fight with each other. And it's in the midst of that meal that Peter Pan stands up, begins to fly, begins to do what Peter Pan does. Eventually he crows because he sees something beautiful is happening around that table, because that's what happens when we see one another, when we allow ourselves to actually connect deeply with one another. I think about a few weeks ago standing in this church, and we recognized a man that had given his life to serve in this church. It was his mission, serve this church. And he did it as a greeter, and I was taken aback when I just shared the story of Earl Mewson. He passed away this past week. But I shared the story of Earl Mewson and how he got up early in the morning to come here. How Earl would get to bed early at night, so he'd have enough strength as he fought cancer just to make it here. And just Yesterday morning, we were all gathered here for the service, and I was down here, and the Musin family was sitting all in this section right here. Here sat his wife, Barb, and began to tell the story of Earl. Man, we had a riot together as we sat here and we grieved together, and we had some really sad, hard times as we sat here. But to think about the story of Earl and to share on a Sunday morning with you how he had given his life to serving this church as a greeter for almost 50 years and the standing ovation that took place, I didn't see that coming, neither did Earl. It almost took his breath away. Second service, it was the same thing as first service. A unanimous or a standing ovation that just went like a wave over this church. And I didn't know if it would happen twice. I knew it happened once. And he stood at the back of the aisle. If you were here, he was like this. It was the highlight of his life because he had given his life to this place. It was his joy to serve this church. So to sit here yesterday with the family, to stand here and begin to share about the life that he gave to us. I shared at one point that when I came to this church 7 years ago, I knew Earl when I was younger and he knew me, and I felt really special to him when I came to this church. Really special. He'd look at me and goes, "Gregor, how are you doing?" Almost like I was his boy. Like I was his. I belonged to him. I thought that said more about me and him over the years, but I began to hear the story that that was everybody that knew him. He treated everybody that way. He saw people and connected with people. And the legacy of his life, because he did that, not something hard. He simply noticed people. And he spent time in the center aisle seeing it as the highlight of his life to greet you. The legacy of that was a line of people that was so long yesterday. It went all the way out to the door just to get to him. Some of you waited in that line for an hour and still didn't get to him because we had to start, or get to the family because we had to start the service. You had to wait till afterwards. This place was packed. These two sections were filled with people. Why? Because Earl opened the door. Earl spent time noticing people and caring about people. That's it. This is not hard. What does it look like for us to be those kinds of people? To just say, "I notice you. I see you. Let's have a cup of coffee. I see you. Let's sit down and have a meal together. Let's connect with one another." It's not about the coffee. It's not about the meal. It's about the connection that matters. I'm going to ask us this week to be. Just the first two words of this acronym, B. And the B of that is to bless three people. Write them a note. Send some kind of encouraging thing that blesses their life. Do something for them. Buy them a gift. Find three people. Let this become a habit of our lives. And then eat. Find three people. Notice. Go ahead and pray about it. Take time to pay attention to people. It would bless somebody. You might see them and say, "It may bless them if I can just sit down and have a cup of coffee with them, eat with them," each with three people. Our mission is for the sake of the world. Our method, let it be that of Jesus. Let's pray together. And may it be that there will be eyes that opened for the first time right here in this room to people that need a conversation, that are yearning to be noticed. May we be those people that take it as our method of living to connect deeply with others. And may the result of that be that their eyes would be open to how beautiful you are. And we pray this in your name. Amen.